6:30 in the morning. Well, that's fine for me, but my wife's still out cold asleep. If I wake her up, then we're gonna have a problem.
We don't want those problems on the pod. Well, actually, from the drama perspective, it could be pretty good.
It could be, you know, it could be maybe one of the best ones.
One of the best episodes yet. Go wake your wife, Mario.
Welcome to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with your host, Tom, the Digital Architect, Liebel. Are you tired of spending money on marketing efforts that produce little or no results? Unable to decide whether internet marketing is right for your business? Want to take your brand to the next level but are unsure of what steps to take next? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in their pursuit of growing a profitable business and learning actionable strategies on how they can outperform brands that are older, bigger, and stronger.
Hey, listener. Today I'm coming to you straight from the slums of Bangkok. We have started filming the documentary and we have at least a week of 12-hour days ahead of us. It was even tough for me to find time to record this. I have an awesome guest today that was willing to come and answer a few questions about accounting. If you don't have this part down, then you don't have a business. So enjoy. So if you could kind of introduce yourself and maybe give a bit of your background, I think that would be helpful.
So I guess I started in public accounting at Ernst & Young. That's one of the big four multinational firms. Did about 2 years there in the audit department, which was completely miserable. You know, just huge companies that really just don't care about their business. You're dealing with low-level staff, and really it was just completely miserable. You're nudging for information all day. And then after about 2 years of that, you know, I was recruited to this smaller firm where pretty much the opportunity was, hey, you know what? We're looking for a young guy, and, you know, we're going to teach you the ropes around more or less the tax side of things, still do some accounting and some audits, but you know, more or less we do tax, but we'll give you free rein to kind of do whatever you want. Obviously, you have to be reasonable with things and make sure it makes business sense and, you know, ultimately be on a partner path. So in 3 years, I was made partner at the firm I'm at now. So it's four offices in Connecticut, one co-working space in New York, and we have about eight employees and two partners. Been history ever since.
So what type of clients do you usually deal with?
Our types of clients range from the, you know, people with their head down trying to make their first 100,000 in business, to people who've had, you know, $50 million exits, to anywhere from online business to offline businesses, local manufacturers, local celebrities. We vary a lot in what we do. I mean, the firm I'm with's been in business for, God, I think like over 85 years. Our clientele range, especially by partner, my partner that I work with mostly, he's 61, I think. His clientele are the more brick and mortar businesses. Mine are moving more towards the online type businesses. So it's interesting.
So in about 10, 15 years when he goes, you're going to be the big man in the office.
Well, I don't know. I mean, you've seen me before. I'm not the tallest guy in the world, but
if you get yourself a big chair and kind of glance over the people, maybe get the right office for yourself on the second floor, you know, they'll fix things.
Gigantic desk, huge chair, you know, maybe I'll put like something in the chair that looks like a big, big person.
But you're getting close.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. You know, I do my best.
The thing that I've been noticing is that people get really excited when they start their business, but most of them ignore or just don't take the time to set up the proper company structure. So can you give me your thoughts on this?
Yeah. That happens all too often. I mean, one, from a legal liability side, you know, you're leaving yourself fully exposed. Second, from a tax side, is you don't know how you're going to be taxed. And then all of a sudden, when the year ends and there's nothing you can do about it, you have this big tax bill and it was completely unexpected. If you're making money, you're going to pay taxes, but at least plan for it in the beginning of how you're going to pay these taxes. Don't get yourself penalized. Set up your structure for your own legal protection and at least try to minimize your taxes and set up an accounting system, because that also helps.
What do you mean by an accounting system?
All too often, like you said, with the you know, the person who just starts their business, starts earning revenue, starts paying expenses. However, they're paying expenses from their PayPal account, you know, a personal PayPal account half the year. Then, well, you know what, maybe I'll put it in the name of my business. Maybe I'll get a third one just to have a third one. I have three different credit cards, four different checking accounts. And then I got to put that all together at the end of the year to get P&L of some sort, you know, profit and loss, and say, okay, what was my actual income so I could pay my taxes? Well, putting that together when you have 40 different accounts is a pain.
So is that the biggest mistake that you see people do initially, or is there something else too?
That's one of, you know, that probably actually is the biggest mistake. And I'll tell you what, though, they learn it very quickly.
within the first year.
They do. They say, you know what? The problem is it's usually a little too late for the second year, but that third year, they're good. No magic bookkeeper can go back and say, you know, that's what that expense was for. That's what that expense was for. The bookkeeper's going to have to constantly prod them for information. Was this business? Was this personal? Was this for... you know, what was this for? You know, buying product, buying travel for business, travel for personal. You know, what was it? Once you have a system in place of using certain cards for business, at least you know everything on a certain card is for business. Using just this one checking account for business, this is all for business. Pay yourself a regular personal salary of some sort, and then use your personal card for your personal stuff, and then it's 100 times easier at the end of the year.
Yeah, but if you have something like an LLC, which is really a pass-through entity, why would you even pay a salary to yourself? Because it's everything's kind of mixed with personal anyways, right?
Exactly. When I say salary in that sense, it really just means your personal draw from the company. Just people don't understand a lot of times what the personal draw from a company, you know, your LLC means, so they think of it as salary. But when you're just distributing cash from the company, you know, instead of just paying some personal expenses from your business checking account, write yourself a check first or just transfer funds and then pay for your personal expenses.
Can you recommend any software or any programs or apps that I guess make this stuff really simple and work well with bookkeepers use?
QuickBooks, it works. It's a little clunky, kind of almost too feature rich.
It's very clunky. I hate that one.
Yeah. I've used them all. And honestly, I don't know, maybe just because what I'm most an accountant, I personally can use and like all of them. The ones that I see the most are, of course, QuickBooks. I've been seeing more and more of people using Wave. That's like a free one. I've been seeing a lot of Xero, and that's really about it. The one I don't see a lot of and people don't really use much is called Peachtree. It's just like QuickBooks, but even more clunky. So stay away from that one.
Okay. So how does an internet business differ from a regular business from an accounting point of view?
The biggest difference is just that it's so mobile. Where are your assets? Where are you earning income? That's the hardest question for them. It is either where as in states or where as in what country. Sourcing your income, it gets to be very difficult if the person who's earning the income isn't staying in the same place, or where the sales are made, nobody really knows, you know, for a sales tax, because then you're leaving yourself exposed to a lot of different states. So it's really trying to minimize risk as much as possible with internet companies.
So what are some ways to minimize that risk? Because that's really confusing, as you say, with the sales tax. I mean, it's hard to define it.
The sales tax, to be honest, is one of the most confusing and ridiculous things in the entire world. It's just, I mean, some states are just so aggressive. And a lot of times minimizing your exposure is just staying out of certain states for any sort of business filings, doing any business in there, spending much time more than the minimal. I mean, the worst states I've seen are really, California is definitely number one, the worst state when it comes to their, you know, trying to collect sales tax. And probably Massachusetts and New York are the next two.
Really?
Yeah, horrible.
So since you're talking about states, you know, some of the legal guys, right, they always tell you to set up your company in either Wyoming or Nevada or Delaware. Does that really matter? Because it's really the main thing that matters to us is privacy and accounting, right? Like how much taxes do we have to pay? From an accounting point of view, though, does it matter if we go with those three?
From a privacy standpoint, I mean, they would know much better than I would. But just from looking at LLC like filings, you know, I'm in Connecticut, so I see a lot of Connecticut filings. I know Connecticut requires that you disclose the names of the members of the LLCs. I'm sure a lot of other states do that. So from a privacy standpoint, I'd say Connecticut's not good because you have to disclose that name. I've seen a lot of Wyomings, and all you have to put is the registered agent name down. You don't have to disclose the names of the members at all. So that's probably the reason for that from a privacy standpoint. But from a tax standpoint, again, it goes back to your sourcing of income. If me, you know, Mario is here doing accounting services in Connecticut and I have a Wyoming LLC, Connecticut doesn't care. I'm going to pay all my taxes in Connecticut.
I think that's the main misunderstanding when it comes to that. People set up these companies in those states like Wyoming, Nevada, and they live in a different state because that's where their residency is. And they think they don't need to pay taxes because the LLC is set up there. But that's not the case at all.
No, it's not the case. It's not where you set up your LLC. It's always where you're earning your income. If you're going out of your way to set up your LLC in a different state, I would hope you're not choosing a state that has a filing requirement. So like I was saying, in the scenario where, you know, me doing professional services within Connecticut, if I set up a Wyoming LLC, you know, I'm still going to be paying all my tax in Connecticut and have a filing requirement in Connecticut. If anything, having another state where I'm incorporated or have an LLC, it'll just add another filing requirement into that state where, you know, I'm not going to be allocating any income. But like I said, there might be a filing requirement. So choose a state that doesn't have a filing requirement if you are going to do that. But again, it probably just wouldn't make any sense because regardless, I'm going to have to register to do business in Connecticut.
Do you know of any state that doesn't require to file one?
To file, like to register to do business?
Well, no, just a annual filing, right? One where you don't have to do it.
I think Wyoming has just like an annual report, which is literally like pay like a $75 fee and make sure your mailing address is the same is the gist of it. There's no income tax filing requirement though in Wyoming, no.
Yeah, but I mean, you're still paying all of those taxes in your state and then you got to pay another $75 on top of it. So there's no point. You're just adding another. Yeah, okay. But if you set up an S corp or like a regular corporation, it's a little different.
Yes. Again, it all depends on the scenario. But you know, the corporation typically that'll be taxed at the corporate level, and then once you're trying to get money back to yourself to use personally, you either have to pay it out through payroll or through a dividend, which again is taxable. But now the dividend is taxable at dividend rate, which is a little lower. Or salary would be a deduction to the company. So usually what you try to do is just pay yourself enough money where you're not paying any taxes in the corporation.
Yeah, I've known some people trying to be a little sneaky and pay everything out with dividends, but I don't think IRS takes really well with that. I think they expect you to pay like a reasonable salary, right?
Yeah, so again, that's usually the S corporation people. They're always trying to say, well, I don't need to pay myself a salary and these dividends aren't subject to self-employment taxes. So you know what? I'm going to pay myself out all in dividends. Or the term for the dividends for S corporations is usually called S distributions, but to each their own. Then you don't pay the self-employment tax, but like you said, you have to pay a reasonable salary or IRS will just say, well, we'll impute a salary and then send you a bill if you're ever caught.
Right. That makes sense. When someone goes abroad and they're out there for a while, what changes when it comes to this entire picture from an accounting point of view? When someone just moves out, but they still have, let's say, the LLC in the country.
So this is when it really gets dicey. If you really just have an LLC, so now you're abroad the whole year, you know, you qualify for the foreign earned income exclusion, which I think is up to like, I don't know, $99,000 now. So you could exclude up to $99,000 of your income. But if you have just a regular LLC, that income's still subject to the self-employment tax. So if you earned only $90,000 of income in your LLC, you'll still pay the self-employment tax is probably, effectively about 14%, 15%, something like that. So you'll still pay a little bit of tax.
Right. So you can't completely not pay anything. There's always that self-employment tax.
Right. There's always that self-employment tax with the LLC structure.
Right. With that one. Yeah.
Right. Now, if you set up if you set up a foreign corporation, pay yourself a salary through there, you could theoretically not pay any tax in the U.S., as long as your income, again, isn't subject to what's called subpart F income, earning too much income overseas, and then it starts getting to be like you're doing, hiding it. You don't want to do that either. But, if you're earning $100,000 overseas and then you pay out $95,000 in salary, you're probably fine.
I mean, I know it gets complicated, and I think every listener now should really go to an accountant when they want to think about their own structure. I'm just trying to get an overview so people can understand kind of what to expect. So with let's say a normal corporation, if you pay yourself out of the country, do you still have to pay that? Or do you have to actually set up another foreign corporation where you can kind of, I guess, not pay?
Well, no. If you have a U.S. corporation and you're paying yourself salary out of the country, that would not be subject to tax in the U.S. Your salary.
Right. That's what I mean. If you had that structure, if you paid a regular salary to yourself.
Exactly. That salary would be allowable to be used for the foreign earned income exclusion.
But that's only up to like 99,000.
Right.
That makes sense. I've also heard a lot of good things about Puerto Rico from like the corporate and the personal standpoint. Can you comment anything on that? I've heard like rules changed.
Yeah. Puerto Rico has gotten very interesting, and someone just was like, asking me about this. I don't know, a few months back, they were, looking to buy a company and then bring it to Puerto Rico or incorporate and then buy it in Puerto Rico. God, I got to jog my memory. But a lot of it is incentivized by application. You have to apply to be taxed at these certain rates. And a lot of them were for like professional service type businesses. And I believe they would be taxed at about 5%, and that's it.
Right.
Then the other one was for capital gains. And don't hold me to this, but I think also maybe dividend income. So if you're a trust fund baby of some sort where you're basically living off a portfolio, Puerto Rico is not a bad option. And when you apply for these tax incentives, they're for about a 30-year period, if I remember correctly, something like that. However, if you don't apply and are not approved for these incentives, the Puerto Rican tax structure is just very similar to the United States tax structure.
So it's not just the point of you moving and setting up a residency. You have to apply with your business and hope to get these.
Right. So you have to apply, be approved for these incentive rates, I guess you'd call them. I guess it's also different if you are a U.S. resident. You have to maintain a residency within Puerto Rico for a certain number of days and also not be within the United States a certain number of days. So you legitimately have to move there and spend a pretty good amount of time there.
So this would be good for someone maybe with an online business too, though, which someone likes to be kind of in the States for a while, but then likes to leave to a different country.
That's the thing, is they can't be in the U.S. for too long. Because if they're in the U.S. for too long, then you lose all these exceptions. You do have to do the work. You have to apply. You probably have to hire a lawyer in Puerto Rico that knows what they're doing to actually apply for these things for you, and then get it done.
What mistakes do you usually see when people try to deduct things, and what deductions do people usually miss?
This really goes back to the organization. I see a lot of deductions get missed just by using personal accounts for business stuff. If you don't have a good tracking system of your business deductions, you're going to miss them.
Right.
And that's what goes back to the accounting side more than the tax side of things. Setting up your accounting system so you do capture all your business expenses, hands down the most important, and usually when people miss the most amount of their deductions is just by unknowingly they're paying for stuff personally, and they just don't, they're either too lazy to track it or don't have the proper procedures themselves up to capture all that information.
A lot of people take taxis, right? And the taxi people in some of the cities, like in Vegas, for example, if you ask them for a receipt, they'll give you a dirty look. That's about all you're going to get back. So, and if you're paying cash with it, how do you track something like that?
That's tough. I mean, if you're paying cash and you're not getting a receipt, again, small amount like a taxi, still deduct it, but you have to have a SOP. You're never going to remember that at the end of a month if it happened on the first of the month. You have to sit down, weekly. This is my system to go through my expenses and my income or whatever it is and just hammer it out, because you're not going to remember it a month from now, but you will remember it at the end of the week. And the only person that will remember it is you. The business owner. No magic bookkeeper is going to say, hey, did you go on a taxi ride a few times? Paid some cash for some taxis? Just doesn't happen.
If someone travels on business and they go overseas and they're working on a project for a couple of months, can that person write off the housing, which they're kind of renting only because they're doing that project in that country? Or is that something that you shouldn't be doing?
That's where it gets tough. Now, do they also maintain a are you traveling for business, or do you have a home that you regularly go to? You are only gone for a few months, although it is rather a long time, but you also have this home that you always go to. It doesn't have to be your own home. It could be a parent's home. It could be maybe not a friend's home. It could be, a wife's home. Whatever your, you have to have a tax home to be traveling away from, to have a legitimate travel expense.
A lot of people, they might even go for 9 months for a longer project. But let's say they still have a house in the States and they're not excluding anything. They're still paying taxes as if they were in the States. You know, they're not giving any of the foreign exemptions or anything like that. And in that case, would they be able to write stuff like that off?
Probably. I wouldn't be able to give a definitive yes or no on it. There's like a 50-page document on allowable travel expenses that the IRS writes, you know, to make it so clear for us. Travel is one of the things that does get looked at more than anything on the IRS side because it can so easily be abused. But I mean, the bottom line is if you have a business reason to do this travel and if it's reasonable, then it's probably deductible.
I'm not saying someone's going to be living it up like a boss, right? Like,
right.
You know, $400 a night. I just mean, if someone's just getting like a cheaper place, but just needs to keep it for a business, that's something that a lot of people deal with when they're abroad. I mean, they're working on longer projects, not just 1 or 2 months. They're still paying taxes back home. So it's just something that I'm wondering.
Most likely, yes, they could probably deduct it again. You'd want to dot your I's and cross your T's on a scenario like that. But, you know, as long as it's reasonable in price, there's reasonable for different people, too. You know, there's reasonable for Donald Trump. He has to go wine and dine his clients and travel, you know, on a private jet. And you know what? That's normal for a guy like him. But for people earning income at certain levels, a big deduction, the extravagant place, it would just be completely disallowed.
You're preaching class warfare right here.
Hey, I don't make the rules. I just try to interpret them.
If someone here is thinking of starting a business or has started a business and they don't have any type of business structure or accounting structure in place, what's something that you would just recommend? And obviously, this is not advice that anyone can kind of say like, oh, Mario told me. But just if this was just your friend asking, I'd be like, dude, just get this done so that you're safe.
Right. So the first thing I'd say is start an LLC. I mean, the LLC is the easiest route and it protects you legally. So, you know, that's step one. Step two is open a business checking account. Only use your business checking account for business. Don't pay any personal expenses out of the business account. Get a business credit card or a personal credit card because you probably won't be allowed to get a credit card under the name of the business. And only use that credit card, even though it's under your personal name, for business. Then also have a second credit card for your personal expenses. This way, now all of your income, all your expenses, income's being deposited into your checking account. Expenses are being paid out either through your credit card or through a debit card, or who knows, maybe even write a check or two. And at least now you know everything that was business related will be coming through with your bank statements or credit card statements. So now coming back the end of the year to track stuff, even if you've done nothing throughout the year, you'll at least have some documentation and you could kind of tick and tie things out of what expenses are for, and what the income was. And it's much faster than finding all your information in 10 different accounts.
Yeah, well, the one thing I can recommend from my end is that the first business card that you can get at any time once you set up an LLC is a Home Depot card. They will give it to you right away. And that's the best one to build your business credit with.
Really?
And then you can, And then you can start getting those points cards, right? So a lot of people don't realize that if you get, let's say, American Airlines Visa and MasterCard to get those, let's say, 100,000 miles, you can also get the Visa and MasterCard business cards and get another 100,000 and fly first class like a boss.
Yeah, exactly. Use the points.
You gotta use the points. All right, Mario, I really appreciate this. If you could tell people where they can find you and reach you, maybe in case they want to ask you more questions or just do business with you.
Best place to get me is probably email. My email is mario@greenhousereardon.com. Probably find me through my website, which is a pitiful website as we speak right now, but I don't use it very much. And that's www.greenhousereardon.com.
Thank you for listening to this episode. If you enjoyed it, please help out by leaving a review on iTunes. And don't forget to hit the subscribe button. If you have any questions, hit me up in the comments on smartbrandmarketing.com. Until next time.
Thanks for listening to the Smart Brand Marketing Podcast with Tom, the Digital Architect Liebel. For more tips, tricks, and interviews, come visit smartbrandmarketing.com. That's smartbrandmarketing.com. And join the newsletter. It's free.